car enthusiasts and the people who love them.
Hello, this is The Thing About Cars. We're recording, as usual, at Strongbox West in Atlanta, Georgia. And around the table we have...
Ben.
Becky.
Ronnie.
Becca.
And I'm Mickey. We've got an interesting spread of topics up on the board. But first, I want to ask Ben about his travels. Ben has a job which gets him to travel around the country a lot more than his old job did. And Ben, what did you see? Where were you and what did you see recently?
Last week I was up in Pennsylvania doing some work up in the countryside, and I got stuck by a snowstorm. My flight got canceled, so I went up with a day to kill in Philadelphia on a Saturday. And I whip out my phone. I look up Roadside America, a really cool website for finding unusual and just things that are, you know, sort of out of the usual daily perspective around the countryside. And
Roadside America.
RoadsideAmerica.com. One thing they're famous for is having a directory of all the big muffler men statues from the 60s that are surviving around the country.
Cool.
Anyway, Roadside America showed me that there was a car museum near where I was. And I was down south side of Philly near the airport. And that it was not far away at all. So I go there, and it's a place called the Simeon Foundation Museum. And when I walked in at first, I thought, okay, it's kind of amateur. It's sort of an old warehouse with some cars stuck in it with some kind of old fluorescent lighting and kind of poorly staged scenery. But it wound up being really fabulous. The history in that collection is astounding. This guy has mostly racing sports cars from... oh, say about the 1920s through the 50s and 60s, and a few other things as well. But, well, one good example is there's a car there. It's a Shelby Cobra Daytona, one of the six that they made in the 60s. This is the first one, only one completely assembled in the United States. It beat a lot of records out at Bonneville. This car, in addition to racing at Le Mans and places like that, went out to Bonneville and broke several records set 30 years earlier by a Bugatti that is also in this collection. And that Bugatti is one of two cars built for the 1936 Le Mans in the collection. And, of course, the 36 race never happened, so they got repurposed to do other things. There are several of the 6- and 8-cylinder supercharged Alfa Romeos from the 1930s in the collection. There's a 1950s Aston Martin that has been driven in races by Carroll Shelby, Jim Clark, Tony Brooks, and Sterling Moss. All those guys drove that one car.
Just amazing.
Yeah, just the amount of history in that collection is unreal. The first Squire car from England is in the collection. Jay Leno actually came out to the facility and filmed an episode driving it around their backyard. And this Fred Simeone guy, he's a doctor. His father got him into collecting cars. And it's a low-key collection. As I said, the building comes across at first as being a little amateur, but the amount of stuff in there, and it's presented unpretentiously, straightforwardly, it feels very accessible. And unfortunately, I wasn't there on one of the days they do this, but two Saturdays a month, weather permitting, they take some of the cars into the back lot and drive them around for people to see and hear. Everything in the collection runs.
That's awesome.
Well, and the building doesn't matter. It's what's on the inside.
Exactly.
Wow.
Well, as opposed to, say, the Peterson Museum in Los Angeles, I went there a few months ago, and it's very, very nice. A lot of really cool cars in there, but it's just so nice, you know, that it makes it feel a little ivory tower-ish.
You wrote up in parentheses up there, don't forget history.
Right. That Shelby Daytona that I mentioned is, I didn't know this till I saw it. There is now a National Historic Vehicle Register, and this Daytona is the number one vehicle on the register.
Nice.
And I looked this up before we did our session today. There are, I think, 21, 23 cars on it now, and they run the gamut from things like the Shelby to an early lowrider. There was a Cadillac that was used in World War One. There was a movie car in there.
So these are more infamous cars, not just historic cars, but...
Well, some of them are a little famous and some of them aren't. Some of them are just historically significant for, you know, the maybe what went into them or their usages or something they may have opened up culturally.
But it's not for Joe Blow that has a
right
1920 Ford. It's if the car was significant
yes.
in some way.
Yes, like the Model T on the register is the 15 millionth Ford produced.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah. There's also one of the GM Futureliners from the early 40s in the register.
I wonder if it's the one that Kindigat did.
I don't know. I think the register said it was Future Liner number 10, but I don't know if that's the one they did or not. There's a handful of them surviving out of, I think, 12 or 16 that were made.
I wonder what it would take to get my Mazda on the register.
Make it historically significant. Do something amazing with it.
I'm trying.
Teach all Southerners how to drive with the Mazda. Historically significant.
Right. That would be historic, yes.
Well, I have two comments for this.
Yeah.
One, Carroll Shelby is God. I'm sorry. Just hands down.
We're all still sad about that, yeah.
I could do a whole episode on Carroll Shelby and not just his involvement with Ford. There is so much to him.
Oh, yes.
But his charities, his just all that. But number two, Bugatti. It's like Mufasa. I'm sorry. I want to just start going Bugatti, Bugatti, Bugatti. I love that name.
Oh, yeah.
It's Mufasa to me.
They were cool cars, too.
Bugatti. Bugatti.
They were legendary in their day. Yeah.
It's like a cologne, but different. It's like Bugatti.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Well, half the car companies have a fragrance or something out there, so why not Bugatti?
Hey, if you can get Lamborghini phone cases, why can't you get Bugatti cologne?
Exactly. That new car smell in the bottle.
Because we're all looking it up right now. It's like Bugatti cologne exists.
There probably is some... I'll bet you Ferrari cologne.
Yes, Bugatti by Bugatti for men.
Yes. Yes.
Currently unavailable,
how much is it?
Doesn't say a price. I think it was a limited run.
Probably okay. 3,000 an ounce.
$50.
Oh.
Score. I might have to do that just for giggles.
Wonder what it smells like.
That's probably only a fraction of what a doorknob lock in one of the cars would cost. Or door lock knob.
Maybe it's just bottled jet fuel.
Maybe.
Hey, I like the smell of jet fuel. I do.
Yeah.
I love the way airports smell. I'm weird, I know.
It's okay.
You're not supposed to sniff it. I know.
There's a lot of things you're not supposed to sniff, but, I mean, look at what happened in the 70s and 80s, right? Party all the time.
Party all the time. Is that what led to the California fires?
Oh.
It's a sad topic for all of us.
I actually have friends out there that, acquaintances, I should say, that lost literally everything. Mm. A lot of stunt people, a lot of actors. They're obviously not the ones to feel too bad about, because they can recover their losses somewhat easily.
Their bank accounts still exist.
Right, exactly. But for people that, you know, don't have so much, man, that is that's a rough situation. So our hearts and, you know, our thoughts to those that are suffering, to the people that lost families or family members, to people that lost everything that they have, our thoughts are with you.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's just a horrific, just even to think about that kind of situation, let alone live through.
Well, I don't want to get into causes and pointing fingers and stuff, but I think I'm wondering how the insurance game is going to play out with people who lost their
trickier.
Lives. Yeah.
That gets a lot trickier, because unfortunately in areas that are prone to certain events, those events can be excluded.
Right.
And you have to carry very specialized, sometimes government-only insurance to protect it. It'll basically cost your firstborn, and a lot of people go without because they can't afford it.
I heard that they were questioning the power company. The power company made apparently some decisions, and right before the fires really started, they called a couple of residents to say, these lines are sparking near you, get out of your house, or something like that. I heard rumors to this effect. So if the utility company is at fault, what then happens? The utility company's insurance then picks it up, or?
Okay, so are we saying that the initial spark came from the power poles, not from something that came up to the power poles and?
I don't know. I don't know the specifics. And I'm looking at a thing here that Ben posted in our TTAC group. It's the California wildfire claims a vintage car collection, including a one-of-one 1948 Norman Timbs special, which we saw here in Atlanta at the High Museum some years ago.
I hate hearing about that.
And we will post this article on our Facebook page when this episode goes live. But how many rare cars were lost in this event? And how then do you even begin to insure something that's a one-of-one
It can be Lloyd's of London. What was that someone else was talking about? Was it in a Florida sinkhole or something where there were Corvettes?
Oh, yeah, the Corvette collection that fell into the
Florida National sinkhole. Corvette Museum in Bowling Green, Kentucky. I was there a few months ago, too. And, yeah, a lot of the cars were damaged beyond repair, and they're still on display because in the room where the damage occurred, they now have the sinkhole exhibit in part of the room, not the entire room. There's this big, giant, cone-shaped display room, and that's where the sinkhole occurred, and they've got lines on the floor that show you where the edge of the hole was, where the cave underground was, and in this one rectangular spot next to that, they have all these wrecked cars that were in the sinkhole, and a lot of them were concepts and one-offs, and it's something else.
It's horrible to say. I hate seeing any car damaged in any way, especially when they are gorgeous, vintage, something along those lines. But they might have missed out on a very unique display. If you have a two-level, that's one wall is glass, and up above you can see the sinkhole. And if you go downstairs, you can see all the cars kind of disheveled down at the bottom of the sinkhole.
Well, I don't think they wanted to lose the space above ground level, but there is a window in the floor where you can look in and see some of the cavern. There are some lights down there.
Huh.
Yeah. But still seeing the cars down there. It would be a unique display, if not very, very sad or morbid, but unique.
Right.
Yeah. I think one of the principles of history that should be noted for anything that's a one-off is to just understand that we are always creating history. So even if an item is a one-off, if something happens to it, that just adds to the history of the vehicle. And whereas it may be questionable in terms of value right now, you know, down the road, you put it on display and you add to the story of this is what this car endured and here it still is. That in itself gives it a little bit of value in itself, I think. The abbreviated example being that Toyota Tacoma that Top Gear tried to destroy. If anyone watched that episode, they spent a full 1 hour length episode.
They did so many things to it.
Right. They dropped it off a mountain. They sunk it in the ocean. I think they blasted it with 20,000 or 30,000 volts.
They dropped it in the ocean. Is it still going? Is that the end of this? It's still going?
No. Well, I mean, after every incident, they were able to restart the car.
Yeah. That's actually a big deal. I don't know how many people have had experience with waterlogged vehicles, I guess I'll call it. And that's amazing that it started.
They put it on top of a building as it was being demolished. And when the rubble when the dust cleared, they were still able to get in there with the help of a mechanic and start the same car.
Yeah, and it was a simple little like European mechanic with a little handbag. He didn't have a super utility truck or anything like that with all kinds of miracle tools. It was literally just like a little craftsman handbag. And he would spend maybe 20, 30 minutes on it, and it would fire right back up. And at the end of the episode, they drove it into the studio. And they were like, we can't kill it. We don't know what to do.
But, I mean, you know, this other irreplaceable car, this one-of-one Norman Tibbs thing. Am I saying that correctly?
Probably.
It's, you know, it's making, it made history. It was a notable thing when it was still around. And now that it's gone, its timeline is obliterated, right? It's no longer going to make history unless you find someone who digs up library and, like, doing the whole research thing and finding old pictures of it. There's no way to actually physically look at the car or its history anymore.
Sorry.
What was that?
Me trying to put something on silent.
Well, that had the opposite effect.
Sorry, they changed my options.
Right.
Well, this car may be gone, but the record of it exists.
The record of it does exist. That's true.
But the car itself, I mean, is it still existing somewhere in whatever mangled form it is in?
I would presume so. A bunch of charred metal. Yep, that's the
one.
Ronnie's showing us pictures of it. Yep. It's long. It's about 22 feet long with two seats near the front. It's 1930s streamlined
Art
Deco. It
just looks like luxury.
Yeah.
But it's so...
It was mid-engined.
Just epitome for, you know, your Art Deco type...
That's the word I want to use.
Movie-style... Yep. Styling. You know what I mean.
Oh, yes.
The things that you envision when you think about that era.
Yep. All right. Well, again, hope everybody out there is recovering nicely and doing okay.
Definitely. What, have there been fatalities from this fire?
81, 81 deaths so far.
See, yeah, there's so many reasons why I don't listen to the news. 81?
So far, yeah.
And counting.
And counting.
And the crazy thing is, like, there was a report saying that the flames were traveling at 50 miles an hour. So you could try to be getting away. And if, I mean, everyone in Atlanta would be dead with dark traffic. But
yes. People being trampled to death.
Well, there's this one video online. Some lady had her, you know, phone out, and she was filming her drive out of the area, mm-hmm. and everything around her is ablaze. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, God, please don't let me die out here. I'm like, put down the phone and drive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Step on it. Get the hell out of Dodge.
But, yeah. It's but I can't imagine having a fireball move as fast as you can drive.
Right.
Like, that's terrifying.
Yeah, totally terrifying. Yeah. I've had dreams about stuff like that, but we probably shouldn't analyze my dreams at this juncture.
That's a different show.
Oh, yeah.
So I have one car care question. Does your car care what kind of, what brand of gas it gets?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It does.
It does.
Why?
So in terms of a fuel that you want to look at, there's actually a website called toptiergas.com, toptiergas.com.
Mm-hmm.
It is a website put together by a coalition of a variety of manufacturers, GM, BMW, Mercedes, Toyota, Audi, all the big guys, saying that these manufacturers have met a certain reliability standard and ethanol content for their gasolines. So you can look at the list online, and ultimately there's manufacturers that guarantee no more than 10% of ethanol in their fuel. Now, the reason you want to avoid ethanol in your fuel is that ethanol will tear apart a lot of your rubber and Teflon seals for your engines. Mm-hmm. Particularly at BMW, we faced a lot of issues with random misfires, and engines would actually go as far as seizing up because of high water content in the fuel. And certain gas manufacturers will ensure that that doesn't happen. And if mm-hmm. they do have a bad batch, they stand by their gas and they will actually pay for the repairs. Locally speaking, QT has been fantastic in backing up their claims of the 10% ethanol rule. So if a vehicle is found to be misfiring or having some kind of fault due to bad gas, we would take the sample of gas that's in the tank. We would put it in a hydroscope of sorts, and we would find out how much ethanol content there was. And if it exceeded 10%, usually it would be in the 20 to 30% range when it started causing damage, we would send the bill to QT corporate. The customer would provide receipts and evidence that mm-hmm. they do fill up at their gas stations, and QT corporate will cut a check saying, okay, we apologize for this inconvenience, and here is the money for your repairs. And that's why I do recommend shopping at a top-tier gas station, because they will always stand by their word, if not just to keep your car in good running condition.
So the brand does matter.
The brand absolutely does matter.
I would say that back-end recourse would be the main reason, because just to throw a grain of salt into all this, gasoline is completely fungible. No matter where you buy it, it comes out of the same pipe in the supply chain. Basically, all the companies put their quantity into the shared national pipeline network and remove their quantity from it at the other end. So at some point in the chain, it's all in the same pool of gasoline. And so the base stock that goes into the pipe does have to meet a certain agreed upon standard. And it's at the point where they fill the trucks to go to the stations that every brand adds their additives. So, but I still agree with what Ronnie's saying, because if you have a problem with it, those companies will be better about it.
I'm looking at the list and I'm thinking of the places that I occasionally frequent for my gas, and a lot of them are all on it, which may be why I think that the brand doesn't matter if they're all on the top tier list. Like, do I need to be picky between Chevron versus BP versus Sunoco versus something else if they're all already regarded as top-tier gasolines.
That's something I don't notice today as much as in the old days, now that cars are all super electronic and adjust for everything in their running. But back, say, in the 1980s, the Honda that I had for a while seemed to prefer BP. It seemed to run a little better. My mom's Chrysler Reliant liked Shell. It just seemed to run nicer. But nowadays with my Mazda, whatever I put in it, it runs the same way.
Exactly. That's Now, the one name that I'm seeing that I'm not seeing on this list is Raceway or Racetrack.
Correct. Oh, yeah. Or Kroger or Costco.
Costco's there.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, right. There it is. Wow. Back when did they join the list?
Huh. But what were you were mentioning earlier, my G8 really hates the ethanol in the gas. If I can find, there are some gas stations now. I know QT at some of its locations offers ethanol-free gas. You pay more. It is strictly 87 octane, so your regular grade. But every few tanks, when the Pontiac runs, every few tanks, I have to add an additive that counteracts the effects of the ethanol, because that car, she hates the ethanol. She does not like it.
And there is an app you can get that will guide you to stations that have ethanol-free fuel. I think it's Gas Buddy or something like that. Don't quote me on that.
I'm going to quote Ben on that.
All right.
Well, Waze also has a list of, I don't know if they let you pick types of gas.
But, yeah, I haven't seen ethanol-free, but I haven't dug that far.
But you can totally get on Waze and say, show me where the nearest gas stations are and report gas prices and stuff like that.
Sure, yeah.
So,
yeah, to that end, once you do, I mean, this is a very extensive list on the Top Tier Gas website. I would just go to personal preferences at that point. I prefer Quick Trip because they have an awesome store.
Yes, they do.
Their slices of pizza are great. Their little taquitos are great.
Yeah.
Roller food.
All right.
I have not partaken in any of the roller food.
It's good stuff. It's not bad.
Ben and I were talking about that earlier, but, you know, the gas stations typically don't make a whole lot of money off their gas.
Right.
At least the operators, right?
Correct.
It's another company that's actually making money off of the fuel. What the operators make money off of is food, junk food, lottery tickets, tobacco, things like that. I mean, QT has really changed up their model, and they have basically food counters now.
And it's all good food. Like, it's I don't know if it's good for you, but it's tasty.
It's not good for you.
Come on, man. I mean, how good can a personal pizza be?
You'd be surprised.
Like, really?
Yeah. It's actually pretty darn good. For $3, like, you get this.
Get the Red Baron's personal size pizza.
So but then you gotta heat it up. $6.
Yeah. Oh, no. Heat it up on your engine. There was a whole episode way back when about cooking food on an engine. I don't remember who did it.
I knew guys in the Army who...
Was it? Yeah.
Back in the... I wasn't in the Army that long ago, but when I was, there were some guys who'd been in back in the era of the sea rations, you know, the field chow that came in little cans. And they had stories of taking a piece of wire and just wiring that can onto the side of the manifold and driving for a while and stop and open your can.
Wow.
I'm on Gas Buddy, and there is nothing about the grades of gas. It's by prices. It's sorted by lowest gas prices and best gas stations.
Try puregas.org.
So the last thing I think we want to touch on, which is a real quickie, is basically an announcement that comes straight from Chevrolet's press room, something they debuted at the last SEMA show, which was a line of crate engines that they showed in a bunch of vintage vehicles to, you know, highlight the possibilities for builders. And these engines are really, they sound impressive to me, and I didn't know if you guys had read anything about them.
I read the same article you did.
The lineup of those engines includes... They showed a 1973 Chevelle Laguna with an LT5 6.2-liter supercharged crate engine.
I didn't know Chevelle had a Laguna.
A 1967 C10 with an all-new ZZ6 EFI 5.7 V8 crate engine. And then a 1978 Silverado with an L96 6-liter V8 crate.
Do not get an L96. I'm sorry.
Why not?
Why did I say that?
Why did you say that?
That's what's in the... Wait, not L96, L70. All right, never mind. Ignore my brain fart. I'm letters and numbers. I'm going to go back to my Google search here. And
That 6-liter one does, I mean, they all sound very, very impressive. Why is Chevy doing this?
Well, it's a business opportunity. Yeah. Now, you know, all your major manufacturers, Chevy, Ford, and even a few others have, you know, done crate motors for years. Mm-hmm. There are lots of reasons to use them. If you're going to buy a brand new engine from a manufacturer, then you're probably looking for something a little nicer. You might be building a special custom project or something. But there's a lot of that going on out there. So, yeah, if you may find an old wreck of a car or truck somewhere that you want to turn into something truly cool, then, yeah, absolutely.
And apparently there's enough of that going on that they've actually put these into mass production.
Yeah, well, again, it's something they've done for years and years. This is just the latest chapter in that.
I guess that's true.
Yeah. Any hot rod supply place has been able to sell you, you know, brand new crate engines from the major manufacturers for decades.
For decades. That is true. That is very true. Good point. Well, it's still exciting stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I my biggest thing is that supercharged one, could I possibly fit that in my Lotus?
What is that, a 5.7 liter engine fit in your Lotus? We may have to alter the hood a little bit.
And the frame, and yeah.
And the firewall. In fact, you're just going to have to sit in the back seat. All right, I think that's all we have time for today.
Can I actually pop in this one that Ben had mentioned, pure-gas.org.
Aha, that must be it.
It's the list of ethanol-free gas stations in the United States and Canada. And there is something available in the App Store and Google Play.
Okay.
There you have it, folks.
If you have a car like I do that really does not like the ethanol, then this might, I'm going to dig around and play with it, but this might be something that could help people.
Cool. Yeah.
All right. As always, thanks for joining us. This is The Thing About Cars, recording in Strongbox West. Please find our Patreon. We're trying to do a little bit of fundraising to get better gear so we can bring you better content. We are eagerly exploring the options of doing stuff on video. So if you have any ideas or suggestions about what we might do on a video production, we'd love to hear from you. What else?
Drive safe and be happy.
That sounds perfect. We'll see you guys soon. Take care.
Take care. See ya.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.